And welcome to another edition of Zoomed In. I'm the host, Brandon Chapman, and I'm joined by my friend and colleague, Chris Conley, an associate professor of kinesiology in the College of Education. Dr. Conley, thanks for joining me.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So, since you got to WSU, I'm very clever, by the way. Conley, I've been calling you the con man. You know, I'm so clever. This is no con. This is amazing news. This is legit non-fake news here, which is a big story coming out of the College of Education. And it's that you and a local orthopedic surgeon, Dr. W. Douglas B. Hiller, long name there, from the Whitman Hospital, and are going to be the official curators, or are the official curators of all medical data for two major triathlon organizations. So take me first through the, 30,000 foot overview of how this came to be. And then I got several questions about how you came to know Doug and how Doug was involved in the triathlon. It's a really amazing story. So take me through the overview.
Sure. I'm happy to. And thanks for the nice lead in there. It's an interesting story, and I'll try to be brief about it. So 4 years ago, I was introduced to Doug. And I didn't know who he was at first. It just so happens that my previous line of research, I'd kind of hit a few dead ends, and I was feeling a little out of sorts with some of the things that I needed to do, and that's when I ran into Dr. Hiller, and since then we've become really good friends. Doug has been involved with the sport of triathlon since the early 80s, when he himself was a triathlete. Because of some medical conditions, he could only do two or three Ironmans, which are one of the most prestigious and well-known ultra-endurance races in the world. So he had done a few of those, but as an orthopedic surgeon, he also had a passion for athlete safety. And this was back in the time when triathlon was becoming a major sport. I think the first Ironman World Championship had like 40 people at it. And this year, in just a few weeks here, we're going to have 5,000 people at that race. And there's Ironman races all over the world.
For the viewer, who might not know what Ironman or a triathlon is.
Sure.
Obviously, you've mentioned ultra endurance is the phrase you use. But how does that differ from, just running a marathon?
Yeah. So, obviously, running a marathon is very well known. It's 26.2 miles. The sport of triathlon traditionally involves a swimming leg, a cycling leg, and a running leg. It can have other legs, right, or different combinations, but those are the three primarily in that order, right? And there's different distances. The Ironman distance triathlon, the one that we're talking about here in particular, involves a three-mile swim, usually in open water, 112-mile bike ride, and then a marathon. And then a 26.2-mile run. So when I'm talking about ultra endurance, I really do mean ultra endurance. The world record holder will finish in 7 hours, but for a number of people, this will take 16, 17, even 18 hours to complete. To say it's physiologically taxing would be a massive understatement. It's an incredible feat. So anyway, Doug has been involved in this sport and this championship race specifically in Hawaii for 40 years. And after he was a participant, he was a physician and he was the medical director. Anyway, for many years, he collected all of these records on athletes that received treatment in the medical tent. And he just had boxes and boxes and boxes of data. And when he moved here to Colfax from Hawaii, he was looking for a research partner to finally fulfill one of his lifelong dreams, which was to actually take all of this data, transcribe it, and begin analyzing it, because he knew there was a story there. He knew that was a key to athlete safety worldwide. He just, as a very busy surgeon and not as a researcher, he didn't know to go about how to doing that. But he told me at one point, before I die, this is something I want to make a reality. So it was fortuitous that we ran into each other, and the more that he talked, the more interested I was. And I learned.
You talk about Yeah, you talk about running into each other, like at the grocery store. Like, how do you end up meeting somebody?
He had sent an email to the kinesiology department here at WSU and said, "Does anybody want to collaborate? Does anybody, you know?" And most of us, we get these kinds of emails, and it's kind of like, well, maybe, you know. Yeah. So a colleague of mine who's no longer here had talked to him and said, "Hey, I think you ought to talk to this guy because it fits within your area of exercise physiology." And I was like, "Sure. What does a meeting hurt?" So it really was that random, that fortuitous. And so we began working together. One of the things that my lab does well is it uses undergraduates, free labor, right? We have a number of undergraduates that work in the lab, and they do an amazing job. And over a two-year period, we spent over 4,000 man hours transcribing all of these records into this massive data set, which now is the basis of our database that we've created. And we've been presenting on this data at regional and national meetings. We have a number of publications under review right now. It's led to a number of collaborations since then and additional partnerships, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute. But that's how it all started. And Doug and I have a great working relationship. He's still very much involved in everything we do. And so it's been a great partnership so far. But it started within the realm of Ironman Triathlon, and now it has progressed to a formal partnership with World Triathlon, which is the international triathlon governing body.
Now, did just looking over some notes here. So, did Doug have to keep these boxes of medical data? I mean, or was that just something he was doing on his own? Or was he like, did he legally have to keep that data?
I do think there was a legal component there, but he did not keep them out for legal reasons, I don't think. He has always been infatuated with this idea of athlete safety. And if you don't look at the data and you don't analyze the data, you will never know. A sport will just continue to function as it always has. And oftentimes, if that occurs, decisions are driven by business and driven by revenue rather than by athlete safety. And therein lies the great danger in the sport of triathlon, is it's so physiologically taxing that if we don't study this data and get it out there, decisions will not be done based on athlete safety. And that leads to people potentially dying. So, you know, Doug had all this data in boxes. It's supposed to be protected and they're official medical records. So it's sensitive personal information. So legally, I think, you know, someone is supposed to be very careful with those records. I don't think that's usually done across all over the world, but that's what was supposed to happen. And, you know, in all of Doug's adventures and travels, the boxes just moved with him. So,
and Doug, as I mentioned, he's working for the Whitman Hospital Medical Clinics right now. And no offense to my friends there, because I shared on Twitter last week, best gastroenterologist I've ever known works there as well in Colfax. But I mean, with all respect to my friends in Colfax, I mean, Colfax, Hawaii, you know, like, right. How does somebody go from Hawaii to Colfax? Like, the middle of nowhere.
It's a mystery, especially since he had the largest orthopedic practice on the big island in Hawaii. So, I mean, his move was not done out of occupational necessity, you know. He was getting nowhere with the data and finding a collaborator there. And he was ready for a change to a more rural setting just to try it out for a few years. He's probably going to relocate back to Hawaii soon. And, you know, the option of Whitman Medical Center came up, and it was, you know, 15 minutes from WSU, a great rural location, land-grant university. And he knew, okay, I think there's a chance I could find a decent collaborator there. And he knew the medical school was getting going up at Spokane. So he saw a few promising signs and he leapt at the opportunity. Kind of random.
I'm just going to correct one thing though, 15 minutes from the best rural land grant university.
Well said.
I just gotta rep the Cougs there on that one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's incredible. So in terms of findings, right? One of the things when we put this news out is we talked about the publishing critical findings on ultra endurance exercise in extreme heat conditions. So what kind of critical things are you looking at or gathering from these athletes? What are those critical things?
Yeah, it's a great question you ask because there's so much data. We have all the medical data on all of these athletes. We have performance data. We have environmental conditions. We have demographics. So I mean, the list is endless. You know, I think it's natural that you look at the most dangerous things first, right? The most severe. And one of those things is hyponatremia, which basically means that you have low sodium content relative to the amount of fluid in your body. It's highly dangerous. Sodium is critical for proper muscle and organ function. So one of the issues with a race like this is obviously you're going to lose a lot of water. You're going to sweat a lot. And so you lose a bunch of water, but when you also lose water, you lose a lot of salt when you sweat and electrolytes, right? And so one of the problems for many years in this sport and other ultra endurance sports was, well, when you're losing water, you're dehydrated, so drink more water, which is true. But one thing we forget is if you're losing a bunch of salt and a lot of your electrolytes with that water, and you're only replenishing with water, you're just diluting yourself more and more, and your sodium content is going down and down, and that is extremely serious. So that's the first thing we're looking at. We've looked a lot at heat-related illness too, heat exhaustion, heat cramps, heat stroke. Interestingly, with that, we're not finding a lot. It seems that the intensity, the pace and the intensity needed for this race is just below the threshold to see a lot of heat stroke. But in shorter Ironman distances, the rates of heat illness go up by a ton because the pace and the intensity is just a little bit higher because the distance is shorter. So those are a couple of things we've started to look at. But, you know, we've looked at trauma-based injuries. We're looking at overall trends. And one of the big things that I'm doing right now with Brian French in the college that we're excited to start working on is trying to figure out what profiles of athletes are we seeing at the highest risk for a potential situation. And maybe that's based on age and on competition level, but maybe it's based on past injury history or past hyponatremia. So we're trying to figure out those profiles, which will be at the highest risk so that we can, you know, as a sport, intervene there and keep everyone safe.
Yeah. You mentioned Brian French, and this is something that you had talked about in the news release that we put out about the Triathlon Research Coalition. So that was, we've moved forward on the page here on the questions. You know, looking forward to some of the great possibilities you have. So, I at the risk of putting everything out of order, that's the way this story is going to go now. We're all going to just be out of order. Talk about the Triathlon Research Coalition, which, you know, in the last few months has kind of been still in its infancy. But what are the possibilities there? And I would especially love to know, what are we going to do? You know, how do we actually manage this data? So we're getting the data. What does that mean to be an official curator? And then let's just say we learn something, you know, like as it turns out that some of this, the salt is important, you know, sodium's important in this process, right? What do we do? How does that get back out to the broader community? Where is that published? You know, how do athletes find out about that?
You ask a great question. Maybe I'll start.
That's like seven questions there. Yeah. Sorry.
No, I think I got a pathway forward here. let me start with the reason for the Triathlon Research Coalition. The data that we've been managing is large scale data, but we're doing it without funding right now. Right. This is all based on volunteer efforts. You know, the College of Education has been very generous with servers and IT help. Right. But you know, what we've been done so far has been just based on our own time and our own effort, and it's been very time intensive. But we recognize that with a partnership with World Triathlon and more work with Ironman, we are going to be receiving much higher quantities of data. the rate of data influx and the rate at which we're obtaining data will be greater than what we can handle and manage without funding and without a more efficient platform. So we need something to help us support that. So that's why we've kind of envisioned the Research Coalition as a mechanism to help us manage the database. Now, that coalition would theoretically serve another purpose here. And it's maybe the more important purpose, which is that the quality of triathlon research is not good out there. You get a couple of studies every year, which are good. They're usually done on small samples or isolated races somewhere around the globe. That's helpful. It tells us bits of information, but we have no comprehensive research out there in this sport. So how can we possibly understand what the overarching safety issues are from a research standpoint? We've got anecdotal accounts, but comprehensive scientific knowledge is what we're all about here at WSU. So we need to up the quality of the research. And that's why another reason for forming this coalition. So what we envision are several high-level individuals who are involved with the various triathlon organizations around the world, whether it's Ironman, World Triathlon, USA Triathlon, or involved with advanced athlete safety in other sports. We've got some individuals at the Mayo Clinic, as an example, and some individuals at some very prominent sports performance institutions and orthopedic centers on the East Coast that would partner with us on this. And what we would do is solicit funding from organizations, from companies, from sponsorships, which would allow us to come together as a group. It wouldn't be, you know, a conference. We'd probably do most of the stuff virtually, but it would allow us to run the database. It would allow us to begin some seed funding for younger investigators. It would allow us to have student-driven initiatives for students to go to these races and help collect data and be involved with the analysis and publishing. And overall, we envision this really as the platform to accelerate and improve the quality of research on triathlon safety worldwide.
Now, I can imagine a number of industries, whether it's shoe manufacturers to, liquid IV that would want to know how their product could get in. So the corporate sponsorship, I'm sure.
The substrate industry, right? The equipment industry. These are major players in this field. And then in addition to that, there are individuals and families who are extremely passionate about the sport of triathlon, who are looking to advance the sport to the next step. Well, the next step within the sport is improving safety and creating bridges between these organizations. And so we see as a coalition, our job as being crucial. Now we're really just in our infancy with that, but within this next year or two, we see great steps forward on that, and think it will bring a lot of attention to the work we're doing here at WSU.
Yeah, and there's I can only imagine there's a fine line between, obviously your goal is safety, right?
Yeah.
Improve safety. Some people, though, I can imagine, especially those that are really motivated by competition, you know, see some of the research coming out as a means to improve performance, right?
Correct.
I'm gonna be able to beat the next record because I know how to push my body farther than it was before, you know? So which if you can push it farther, and maybe that is an issue of safety as well. But I know you seem to be, in my discussion with you and with Dr. Hiller, all about making it safer. And other than that, I can't even imagine the ultra endurance participating in it. It's just incredible athletes.
It's an incredible feat. And, you know, there is a dark side to the sport. There's a reason that the medical tents at these races are closed off to the public and the press, right? Athletes are brought in and they're in very, very poor shape medically, right? And they're treated and they're patched up, and many of them go back out there and keep competing, which is unbelievable. And so the drive to compete and to perform high is extreme. And that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing, except these individuals are so many of them are so motivated to perform well that they are willing to go through, put their body through just about anything to get to that level of performance. And therein maybe lies the scary place where we
some die doing it.
Yeah, there aren't a ton of accounts, but worldwide it does happen. I just received an email yesterday from a colleague on the East Coast. He ran in the Wisconsin Ironman this last weekend. And he said the conditions were very poor, 50 degrees, 25 mile per hour wind, rain the entire time. Worst case conditions. And he said over a third of the athletes did not finish the race, which is extremely high, many of whom became hypothermic. Their body temperature dropped too much with the being soaked and the convection. And that's just one example, right? I don't think anybody died, but those are very serious situations.
Yeah, and some of those are those external things that come into it, because I'm looking right at one of the things that Dr. Hiller had talked about among the many different reasons why you'd want to collect this data and make these evidence-based recommendations. But one was safe wet bulb temperatures for racing at different distances. Obviously, sometimes we're talking about ultra endurance in heat, but in this case, you know, what if the temperature is really low, right? Yeah. What if it's wet? What if it's different than that? So
yeah, both are important to consider, right? These extreme environments. You don't get a lot of these races in cooler weather. That was a little bit more of an exception. Although, you know, it's late September and you're in Wisconsin. What do you expect, you know?
I expect the Cougs to go on the road and beat Wisconsin football.
That's what I expect. Oh, wait, did that happen? Yeah, that happened. Oh, man, yeah.
Hey, let me just ask you personally, because I actually thought about running a mile once. Yeah. you ever been interested in doing something ultra endurance? Or is 5K your limit?
Usually the 5K is my limit. I have a lot of people ask me, they'll say stuff like, so you must be a ultra endurance triathlete yourself. And I'm like, I mean, look at me. No, I don't think so.
I take the fun out of 5K fun run.
I am fascinated by the sport. I'm fascinated about what the athletes can do. You know, I've thought many times about doing a triathlon, although I surely would not start with this distance. I'd start with the kiddie distance, or there's a sprint triathlon, which that sounds fun. I was a swimmer in high school and a little bit in college, so the swimming part would come naturally to me, and I think the running I could survive. Wouldn't be fun, but I could survive it. But the cycling, I've never felt super comfortable cycling, so that's where I'd need to train up, Chappie.
Okay, well, it is a bicycle, though. It's not a unicycle. I think you can probably do it.
It's
true.
It's a bicycle. Yeah.
But if you wanted to,
maybe someday. Yeah.
If we wanted to put it on television, let's put them on a unicycle and
that's right.
Watch them go.
That would get some viewers for sure.
I think this is incredible research. I'm glad to hear that this came along when it did for you, I guess, professionally at that time. So yeah, really, really good. Big news. I think good for the industry, good for the college as well. And it sounds like you got a friend out of it too with Dr. Hiller.
He's a good man.
Anything you want to add?
No, just I guess that I'm grateful for the college, to the College of Education, and to WSU for being supportive of this work. I think a number of people here see an enormous amount of potential with this. And that it could really bring some serious notoriety to the work we do here, the colleagues we have here. I'm excited that WSU gets this opportunity. And, you know, I hope that from our end, and I'm confident that we can, that we'll exceed the expectations that everybody has and really, you know, deliver what's deserved to the college, I think. So I'm excited you know, the sky's the limit over the next 5 years with this.
All right. Dr. Conley, Associate Professor of Kinesiology in the College of Education, really appreciate you coming on with us. And thank Dr. Hiller as well.
I will pass that on. He will appreciate that.
Appreciate that. Thanks.